we are back with episode 841 of The Critical Myth, and this is going to be an episode where we talk a lot about the DCW shows, especially the recent crossover Crisis on Earth X. But before we do any of that, Gary, could you give a disclaimer, please? And try not to, you know, start any death camps in the meantime. Yeah.
Jeez, that's so hard. Anyway, yes, we will spoil everything rotten. We're going to tell who lives, who dies, who gets married, who might not get married. We are going to just talk about everything, and I can't wait. I would like to thank John for having me on the show this night, and I will try not to overpower the entire conversation, even though, yeesh, I can't believe there's this much live DC content. Woo!
I know, and especially when we started with a little bit of disappointment over some of the elements of Justice League, we did say that this seemed to have been much more successful, and I have to agree that I was much more excited about this than I was the thought of Justice League, clearly, since I've seen one and I didn't see the other. Gary, we actually watched all four episodes in one night.
Oh, no, I split it up between I watched two at a time, so.
Oh, we made it an event.
Yeah.
But before we even talk about that, there are a couple other shows that I want to dig into because I think that they actually deserve it. And the first one that I wanted to dig into here is Supergirl. In particular, they had a couple episodes, one that I think was a little bit more successful than the other. But the one that I want to talk about first is Midvale, which was season 3, episode 6. We both gave this episode huge marks. And I think it's deserved. This was essentially Supergirl's Smallville episode. And
it was
glorious. They did such a good job on casting.
And oh my gosh, they were spot on. Holy moly.
I want to see this show.
That's what I was saying. Oh, please let this be a backdoor pilot. Please let this be a backdoor pilot.
I think I would enjoy that show more than I do actually Supergirl. But, you know. I'll let you go ahead and run with the ball.
Well, we only had one episode, John, of course, and much as Smallville had its up and downs, I doubt this would be a nonstop tour de force. But yeah, the actresses that they had to mock the regular stars were so well chosen. The one playing Kara's sister, she was so spot on. Not that the actress playing young Kara was bad by any means, but. I mean, the other one was just so spot on. You could tell how the actress studied her movements and how she stood and moved her arm. The regular actress moved her arms around. She had all the body motions down pat, and the tones were just. It was quite a casting coup as well as an acting coup to have that pulled off like that. It was great to see. We've known all along that these sisters have a very strong tight bond with each other, but now we're getting to see why they have these tight bonds with each other. And it was beautiful to watch. It was enjoyment. No, there wasn't kryptonite villains around or anything like that. And I was perfectly fine with that. It was just nonstop fun.
It really was, and it was endearing in the proper sense. And I think that as a follow-up to what was going on with Alex and her whole relationship thing, I really felt like this was a great episode. I mean, it just was everything that I could have hoped for in terms of a kind of Supergirl growing up type of story could have given. And come on, Gary. The direct reference to Smallville.
Oh, with the Chloe comment?
Yes.
Yes, I was squealing. Oh, well, maybe squealing might be too strong a term. At least inside I was. That really has tons of implications. Of course, I'm still trying to figure out how Arrow fits into all this now. But maybe on that world, maybe that is the Smallville world. It could be possible. It could kind of make sense. It fits. It doesn't. I don't see anything that contradicts it at this moment. So I will just say, I can live with that. That would be fine.
Right. I mean, it's a different universe, right, from the rest of the Arrowverse. It's in its own little pocket, and Clark is around.
As a reporter at the Daily Planet, it still fits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the costume is a hair off, but technically we never saw him in the costume, so it really doesn't matter.
That's true. We never really saw him in the costume. And, I mean, yes, the actor is different, but that's easily explained. I think that you could easily just assume that these two properties, these two shows, weren't, quote, in the same universe. Yep. And that's pretty cool, actually. I really like that. Even if, Smallville did have a small girl. And... Or not a small girl. It's a Supergirl. Excuse me. wow, I'm getting all these words jumbled. But, of course, there were...
And she wasn't Supergirl.
yeah. it was kind of incompatible, I guess you could say. But I think that you could make the argument that there is a version of Smallville that took place in the same universe, at the very least.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else that you want to say about Midvale?
No, I think I've gushed over it enough.
Okay. And then the other episode that led into the crossover was called Wake Up, which was the return of Mon-El.
Yes.
And the introduction of perhaps some other characters?
I've been begging for, you know, for years now, so I have to be happy. Yes, they introduced another member of, now they didn't call it the Legion of Superheroes, Legion Corp, I believe was the actual term that was used. And we were introduced to Saturn Girl, who, besides not being blonde, not from Titan, but actually from Saturn, from the sounds of things, since the controls were in Saturnian, as they referred to it, is also Mon-El's wife, which, number one, I did not like that fact. That little bit aside, I thought it was a cheap ploy to drive a wedge between Kara and Mon-El. I think they could have come up with much other things than, hi, I'm back after being gone, and this is my new wife. Just seemed a little trite to me. I would have rather had...
I think it would have been better if they weren't married.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was just, hey, here's...
My new girlfriend?
Not even girlfriend. No. I think it would have been fine if it was that I went to the future and this whole new situation has emerged that is more important than the two of us. Made it less about romance.
I see what you're saying. I understand that you're saying, you know, this is a, you know, I have something more important than us to deal with right now. Yeah.
Exactly.
I could buy that. Yes.
Well, only because so much of last season was this whole romance fest. And I feel like some of the things that have been good about Kara's character this season is the fact that she hasn't been bogged down with that. So, yeah.
Well, she's come through it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we'll leave that aside for right now because, you know, she's involved in this other thing that's coming up a little bit later. But let's go ahead and switch gears over to The Flash. And first of all, we had a couple episodes. The first one was Season 4, Episode 6, When Harry Met Harry, The Council of Wells.
I realize the actor is probably having a ball doing these scenes, but honestly, all the other Harrys seem pretty darn incompetent, and I don't know how they could.
All crazy.
And I don't even mind eccentric or even crazy, but I don't see how they would have. I don't even see how they would be able to communicate with him because I doubt they lack any of the intelligence to do or equipment to do so.
I really feel like this season, The Flash is less about. Necessarily always hitting all the logic notes and is more about reestablishing itself as the smartly funny part of the DCW. Because that's where it started, was the lighter hearted type of material. And
yes.
I think that this episode gave us that. The last few have leading into this point. And, it's just, but come on. Yeah, some of the moments with the Harrys were just,
don't get me wrong. They were hilarious. And, that was great. The post-apocalyptic one, I think, was I enjoyed the most. But that was it was really enjoyable. I just, as I said, I would have rather had Cisco bring them to Earth than this whole communication thing that I just couldn't. That I thought was really stretching it. But you know, or even if Harry had opened up a portal using tech or something to have them come in or something would have played a little bit better with me. But yeah, it was still very humorous. And generally this, I've often said, as soon as they got rid of the Iris is going to die plot, you know, the whole show lightened up. So
yeah, very, very much so. Very much
so. And it needed it. It really did. I felt I haven't seen the numbers, but from, you know, with this, what I read online and stuff, I think people are enjoying the show a lot more now than they were. So
yeah, I think that that's very much so. Now that brings us into episode 4.7, which was Therefore I Am, which is essentially the origin of the Thinker, the big bad for the season, and perhaps a little bit less lighthearted, as I found that in this episode, Barry was surprisingly just, I felt like he was almost out of character.
Yes.
Especially compared to how he's been all season. There were some certain things he was doing which just didn't make sense. Also, did you know, Gary, that Barry and Iris are getting married? Because I think they told us about 19,000 times in this one episode. Hey, you know what's happening next week? They're getting married. Hey, you know, we're getting married in a week. You know what I'm doing? In a week, I'm marrying the person that I have loved the most throughout my entire life, and we're getting married in a week.
Yes, and I won't disagree, but while he was, I enjoyed the wedding commentary while he's trying to fight someone.
Yes.
That was actually enjoyable. That part, I thought it was, well, as we talk about
ridiculously fun.
Well, as we talk about the humor of the Council of Harry's, that I think was in the same vein, where it's this, you know, very tongue-in-cheek laughing type of situation.
Now, what about the origin of the Thinker himself? I felt like, I don't know if it's the actor, but it did feel to me a little bit disappointing.
Well, yeah, because it was. He's not a flashy, no pun intended, villain by any means, and he's, you know, he's basically just trying to, you know, outsmart him to a large extent, and so it's you know, they often throw villains like this, I think, at somebody like the Flash because he can't speed his way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it forces the character, it forces the hero to maybe not do things he wouldn't do, but definitely have to do things differently because he can't outrace it. He can't vortex it. He can't, you know, do any of his normal tricks with this guy. He has to expand his possibilities, and he's got to come up with new ways to handle a situation that he can't brute force his way through. So, I mean, it's not an unheard of thing. And, you know, even in some extents you can look at this as Grodd done better. Where it focuses on the sort of the mental aspect rather than the physical. Now, unfortunately, you know, in this show, they did make Grodd a very physical creature, but he's not always portrayed that way. He's very much portrayed as a schemer, which is what they're doing with the Thinker here. And like I said, Barry can't outrace. There's no speed involved in this, really. So he's got
to. Actually, yeah, that is what we've been asking for a while.
Yeah. So we're getting it. We're getting a villain who he's got to, you know, outthink. In some ways, we did see this in the beginning with Thrawn, I think, where once he realized who he was, but he still had to, you know, play the game. We got a little bit of that, I'd say, but we haven't seen it in a while. Everything's been fight against this super speed villain, fight against that super speed villain. Now we got a guy. He's a villain, and there's no speed involved. So I think we asked for it, especially after Savitar. We don't want another super speed villain. We had pretty much three back to back.
Yes, that's very true.
So I'm fine with a change. I think it could cause Barry to grow and have to deal with things, you know, in a different way. I think it definitely will result in him having to lean on Team Flash a lot more because the speed isn't as relevant. So I'm fine with that. I'm glad. I love our Team Flash crew, and I won't mind seeing more of their participation, which I think is inevitable for this villain.
True.
Once they're married,
the weakness of the origin of the foe aside, I do like this whole idea of there being a group of new metas that the Thinker brought about and trying to figure out the puzzle of why this is all fitting into the Thinker's plan. And I think it is a better type of villain than just another speedster by far. Now, the last show that we just got to touch on a little bit here before the crossover is Legends of Tomorrow. And Gary, you are kind of the one taking it for the team here. Anything in these two episodes, Helen Hunt and Welcome to the Jungle, that we really need to discuss before we go into Crisis on Earth X?
I will say, you've talked about how they're taking their format and what they're doing tongue-in-cheek, and I felt that even they were failing at that. I want to say that I think they've got the groove for it. I'm still not saying that I'm a thrill of their mini-genre that they're creating, but that being said, they're doing it well. They really started to pick up, and I think that they're doing it, I guess, conscientiously now as opposed to just, hey, look what we're doing. I think they're honestly making a run at it now, and the last few episodes actually have picked up a little bit. I'm not still saying it's great, but as you talk about it being what it is, I think they're honestly doing it now as opposed to mocking it.
Hmm.
And it shows a little bit. It's better than it's been. It ain't going to win any awards, but it's they're embracing the genre. Maybe is a good way to put it.
Okay, I mean, fair enough.
So let's see. So that was the Helen Hunt one. I got into an argument with with well, argument strong term, into a discussion with someone over, oh gosh, even she, the girl's not pretty enough. I said, I start to argue of objective beauty versus what was popular at the time and things like that, and it sort of diminished down, and I cut my losses. But yeah, so some people felt she would look a little too plasticky, I guess, for lack of term, and some people argued, oh, she should have even looked Greek. Which I can't argue with either. But
yeah.
So, but that being said, the idea to drop her off in Themyscira, it was a cutesy Wonder Woman nod, and at the same time, I didn't see the need to what's the word I'm looking for? To self-promote themselves that much. But
gotcha.
And it really didn't amount to much. You didn't see any Amazons. All you saw was the island. It even looked like stock movie footage of the island if I didn't know better. So, they had a nod, and obviously it was when they dropped her off was current Helen of Troy time, which was over 1,000 years before Diana, unless they lived forever, in which case maybe, but we never actually saw anybody, so no, it was a very oblique reference. Gotcha. And then Welcome to the Jungle, I thought they did a nice job on it, actually. I enjoyed the whole tourist thing, quasi Apocalypse Now feeling of the army camp. I thought they carried off reasonably well, and I can even tolerate Ray, which is a lot for me to say anymore. They make him so stupid, the butt of jokes, and just throw him in when they need somebody to blast somebody anymore, that that I'm glad to see it, as they focus so much more on Firestorm during this season. Ray's really fallen far, far, far back, and it seems to be sort of a pattern with this. One of the characters comes to the forefront for 3 or 4 episodes, and then all of a sudden they're demoted, and they're just background character for another few episodes. Maybe it's the way they chose to write it, or maybe it's in the contracts, I'm not sure, but it's pretty obvious that it happens. It's been happening fairly frequently, so I wish they find a way to better balance the participation of the cast.
Now, do you think that there's a possibility that the reason that they did that is because of some of what might be coming up in Crisis on Earth X? Because I can see why they might focus a little bit on Firestorm.
Well, yeah, you're probably right, and it's been mentioned that it was mentioned even before the Crisis aired that Victor Garber was going to be leaving the show, and everybody's wondering how that was going to affect everything and how they were going to do his out and everything like that. He's going back to do Broadway. He's had his fill of television shows, so he wants to
can't
go back
blame
to.
Him, to be honest.
Yeah, oh no, he's got to go back to his roots, and this is I could see where a serious actor would have multiple objections to the show at this point, and. Regardless, I wish him luck. I don't feel he ever gave less than his best for the show, for what it was, and his role. And he even sang for crying out loud during one of the shows, so more power to him. We still get to see him so far in little cameos on Orville and elsewhere, so I'll miss the character. I felt he was a voice of reason within this crew that I think it needs more of. So we knew that was coming, so yeah, you're right, John. I think that's the reason why we're getting that right now.
Hmm. Now, that brings us to Crisis on Earth X. So, get us started here, Gary. We've got now. Is Earth X in the comics the way that it is? Is that our thing, or is this a creation of the DCW?
Oh no, Earth X has been around. I went back myself and tried to think personally as well as research objectively. Earth X came about in the early 70s, actually, as far back as I can find it. And the thought was that several of the Freedom Fighters, as their group was known, left just at the end of World War II and went into this alternate Earth, who wasn't doing quite as well. The Nazis were winning, and they felt that they could turn the tide. And on that world, they never really did. Depending on what source you want to read from, they were still every time we travel to that Earth, they're still in World War II, or in some cases, the Nazis have either taken the upper hand and things are looking bleak for the Allies, or it goes full on the way that this did, where it says they basically won, and the Freedom Fighters that came from actually Earth II, without trying to get too confusing, were more of a resistance movement.
Okay.
So it depends on where you want to pick it up and which writer you want to go with. But the core of it is that the Nazis were either winning or won, and we're living in the aftermath of it. And
I'm trying to think of the heroes that they actually did show. The Ray did fall into that original group, although they're actually showing his son, at least from the comic books, rather than the actual Ray himself, which is fine. But yeah, the Ray was a character, and both father and son had this pretty much have the identical powers to each other. So it wasn't that much of a stretch, but I understand the son has a hipper jacket and is much younger, of course. So.
Yeah. Now I really felt like this was a much better crossover than Invasion was last year. This seemed to be something that I think they learned their lesson in terms of making sure that all the shows had pretty good representation. And it felt like the culmination of a number of storylines. I mean, for Supergirl, we not only got to see her doppelganger from the other universe, who, you know, was a lot of fun, but we also had a pretty good subplot for Alex here. It kind of made sense for her to have a little bit of a rebound fling with Sarah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Sarah was fine with it, too. And
But as far as the Flash goes, of course, there was the Iris Barry wedding for Arrow, among other things. I was kind of disappointed that Dig was not involved in the story quite as much, but given what happened on Arrow, maybe you'll understand that when you catch up. But I did find it very interesting that they focus so much on Oliver and Felicity, because things have been kind of moving in that direction. And of course, the Legends were all over this. Because of course, the fate of at least one of the members of the Legend. So I feel like every show got a big chunk of their existing character and plot exploration or progression handled in this crossover. So I really felt it was nicely balanced.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely one of our biggest complaints about the last crossover with Invasion was Supergirl seemed tacked on. Mm-hmm. Not the case this time around. She was extremely integral to it, both as herself and as her doppelganger. So so that was definitely something that they addressed and did well. As you said, the Alex subplot also, you would say, I'd say, serviced Supergirl fans. Also, they chose, and thankfully, I think at least this is what I noticed, last year when they did Invasion, it seemed like, okay, this is mainly like when they're on Arrow. Okay, this is mainly an Arrow episode, where they're the focus of the show. That was not the case with this. Focuses were all over the place, regardless of whose time slot this was. And I thought that made a big deal
Yeah, out of the opening credits even being different, to make this almost like a miniseries. It was an episode of the show, yet that was by name only.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, the Supergirl show was not a Supergirl focused show. All the way through, possibly you could argue Legends at the end maybe leaned a little bit, I'd say, strong on their characters, but still not to say that it was their show.
Yeah, I almost feel like this was their version of the Defenders, in a certain sense, where. If this had been a slightly different situation than, say, a network situation, they might have made this a separate miniseries completely. But because of the contractual obligations and the financial side of things,
I was going to say budget, yeah.
An episode of each show individually rather than a show in and of itself. I'm okay with that, though, because they really made a case that even though this is comprised of individual episodes from each of the four shows, it is its own crossover entity. I mean, all the shows will carry forward from here. But
oh yeah, there were implications. It is not a bottle series by any means. Yeah,
Where I feel like Invasion was. Invasion had no lasting implications for anything. But this had some major ones for everybody. What was the biggest surprise to you?
The second marriage.
Yes. Okay. Same here.
And it wasn't because of what Felicity said earlier on. It really wasn't that's like foreshadowing that it's going to happen. I was surprised and at the same time believed her change of heart.
Yeah.
Which was I saw it coming to some extent, and I don't think it was just necessarily because they were in the middle of Barry and Iris's wedding when it popped up. But I think she was coming to the realization that that her life is, I don't want to say centered around a man, but her life is they're integral. They're a partnership, and it's not just because of the villain of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why she
Yeah, I think that the fact that you hadn't been able to keep up with Arrow going into it, there was a bit of lead-in in the earlier part of the Arrow season where you got the sense that they had both learned something about themselves.
Oh, no, and, I felt that too, yeah.
Yeah, and it continued going into the crossover. So while it was a shock, it was really only because it happened so quickly. But I feel like the argument that they're going to make kind of when they get back to Arrow is that, yes, this was a bit of a shocking, you know, thing for it to happen a little bit on the spur of the moment. At the same time, it is something that I think over time they've made a good case for. What I hope doesn't happen is that this becomes a, now Felicity is going to be in the crosshairs all the time because they're married. But she's in the crosshairs anyway, so maybe it doesn't matter. Were you at all surprised at the death of Professor Stein?
Well, no, because I heard the actor was leaving. But
right. You see, that I feel like was one of those situations where knowing too much going in kind of takes a little bit of the surprise out of one of the plot twists.
Yeah, the sword was hanging over for a while, so.
Now, do you feel like they really foreshadowed it, too, with the whole, hey, look, I've got a thing that can separate you guys? That just felt so blatant.
No, I didn't. I think it's sort of always been an issue. I'm curious how they're going to handle it going forward, because Firestorm is really cool and they invested all that money in CGI. And I'm curious how they're going to come about that. Is Ronnie coming back? Oh, that might be interesting. I don't know how they're going to solve that. I hate to think that Jefferson just gets the powers by himself.
I have a bad
feeling that that's where it's going to go.
I have a feeling that's exactly where it's going to go. That they're just going to have him solo, and that's why they kind of brought their storyline to an end. He's going to end up being in where Ray's situation has been, where it's just, hey, now he's the kind of go-to, what's the word for it? I get go-to action guy. They're going to just bring him in when they need Firestorm's powers, but otherwise he's just going to hang out in the background. But anyway, let's see. What else do you think about this particular crossover in terms of the implications?
Okay, well, let's see. Well, you know, we'll see what implications. We got the two weddings going forward. We got the Professor Stein being gone. We have Kara's sister having come to peace with losing Maggie. I mean, with Maggie losing her girlfriend. What else do we have? We know that Oliver carries a kryptonite arrow, which is
yes,
which is interesting. Even though do we know if there's a Superman on his world?
I don't think there is. I don't think they've ever referred to it.
So it's odd that where did he get said kryptonite arrow? Anyway,
well, it just seems like him being the way that he is, that knowing of Supergirl, now he would find a way to deal with it.
Yes, but that. So definitely
he's the Batman of his kind of, or somewhat the Batman of his universe.
Yes.
Even though apparently they've made now reference to Batman being in existence, but anyway.
Yeah. So does that mean we get a boxing glove arrow soon? Anyway, just something to think about. Yeah. And now that we're getting trick arrows, yeah. Well, let's see what else. I enjoyed Sarah in this. The tryst that she had aside, I found her written better than I think she'd been written in several episodes, if not seasons, of Legends. The actress actually seemed to, I think, enjoy this role a lot more than she's been enjoying her series lately. So that was also nice to see. I don't know if hopefully the writing will keep up a little bit better. And trying to think of any other long-lasting implications. Other than those, I can't think of any. Is there one in particular that I didn't mention that you're thinking of?
No. I wanted to see what else you came up with because you are the resident DC expert.
Oh, during the wedding, we got to see another Legionnaire. For super geeks in the know, Barry's granddaughter became a Legion of Superheroes. Remember, her name was XS, literally the two letters, X and S, but you know, definitely a speedster. And she very much had the complexion as well as the ponytail slash, you know, rat tail or whatever length the artist decides to draw it. About the same stature as well. And the fact that she was gushing over being there at that wedding, it just seemed, at least to every Legion fan in the know, everybody knew right away. So it might not be something as obvious, but so perhaps we have another time traveling Flash relative that's making an appearance. Obviously, the wedding of her grandparents would be a significant event for her to want to go see. So everybody, all the Legion fans that were watching it live were geeking out like mad. So I figured I'd share that for people who aren't necessarily Legion fans, but we all feel that we did have another visitor. And the given the camera time they spent at her and the odd phrasing that she was using, I think everyone was in agreement about it. So that was a little nod that might have passed over some people's heads.
Very interesting. Yeah. Was there anything about this particular crossover that you felt they didn't quite do as well as they could have?
I'm loath to say it, but I didn't. Two things that I really didn't find them cruel enough. Yes, they were nasty and wisecracking and rude and that, but I would have loved to see them more loathing and despicable. Like, I wanted to hate them even more.
I wonder if that's a concession to the network thing as well.
It very well could be. And I'm not sure how they would portray that, but they didn't seem dislikable enough, I guess might be the best way to put it. And then Oliver got rebuked by two women in this miniseries, actually. First, when Elicity turned him down, and then the second time when they were saying how the alternate Kara, the doppelganger Kara, was married to Oliver, Kara looked at him and went, "What?"
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Now, great line, since we're talking about great moments, the great line where, as, Kara and the Flash go ahead and Oliver catches up with them and is like, "Guys, reminder, no super speed."
Yeah, not everybody.
Or he doesn't have super speed. Yeah,
not everybody has super speed.
Yeah, it was a great little moment.
Oh, and I forgot one of the nicer parts of this. We had Kara singing "Run Back to You," which at least in the musical episode, Barry had sung.
Oh yeah.
Now, for those of us who really geeked out and bought the album. There are two versions of that. There's a guitar and there's a piano version. And so we've already heard two versions. So now we actually got a third version. So that was they're certainly using getting worth out of the lyrics that they had written. But that was really nice. And I thought she did an extremely nice job on that singing that song, better than I think than she did with her torch song in the actual singing episode.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a great voice. So that's not too surprising, I suppose. I have to say that I really liked the way that this whole storyline went. I never felt like there was lull in the story. I mean, four episodes, and like I said, I did watch it all in one night, and I really felt like when I got to the end, not only was it satisfying and did it have some things that I did not expect to have happen, Oliver and Felicity, but I felt very satisfied. I felt like those 3 hours were well worth the time invested.
Oh, yeah. I'm just wondering, where did all those Nazi soldiers keep coming from? Gosh, was the portal still open and I didn't catch it? Because they just kept knocking the heck out of them, and then another 20 show up. What the?
They're like tribbles.
Yeah, so that was a little... The nonstop parade of Nazi soldiers in goggles was a bit much. I felt they could have somehow dropped it down to a core group and or had Supergirl and Bad Arrow, I don't know, had the doppelgangers actually fight more. We had the big fight scene with doppelganger Ollie, but there was not a lot of little fighting. Like, I would have enjoyed seeing them involved in a little bit more of the hand-to-hand that they kept pumping out the Nazi soldiers for. Where not everything had to be his epic, half minute fight scene with kick, kick, arm, roll over, back kick, sweep kick. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy those sort of arrow combat scenes where he's, going one to one with somebody for more than 5 seconds. But at the same time, I would have loved to see him, keep up, work a little bit more rather than have them pump out the generic henchmen all the time.
Fair enough. I also thought that it was a little bit much to have Oliver actually be the Fuhrer, but I can understand why they did
that. As I said, he wasn't deplorable enough for me to be in that position where he's got this world that, you know, is so evil and he's in charge of it. And he didn't seem, I mean, you know, the whole love thing aside, he just didn't seem evil enough to be someone in charge and promoting that type of world.
Yeah.
At least that's for me. And I was actually giving them kudos when they announced this. I never thought they would actually show a swastika on TV, given the not only the heat in the United States from right-wing groups, but just in general, there seems to be a prohibition to just show it if whenever possible, to avoid showing it whenever possible. So I was actually surprised to have them open up the scene with it on the building. So that was nice. I think it lent a bit more of authenticity to it.
So I will say that even Edmund watched this crossover, and he seemed to enjoy it quite a bit. I mean, he gave everything an 8 or above. And between the three of us and then Henry, who did the written reviews over on VogueNetwork.com, please go over and take a look. He was a little more critical than we were, perhaps, of some aspects of it. Certainly, he thought that the third part was a bit weaker than any of us thought, but overall, between the four of us, for the entire crossover, it came in at an average of around 8.5. So that is well above average, and that is definitely much better than the Invasion crossover last year. And from what I hear, the ratings for this crossover were huge. And
both nights, yeah.
Yes, a huge shot in the arm to the DCW. So I'm hoping that they take that energy and that positive buzz and capitalize on it huge in this next week as we get into the mid-season finale moments for the DCW.
Yeah, well, they're, like we said, we feel like Flash has turned around. Supergirl's a lot as shaped up a lot more since Kara stopped moping.
Yes, it's not quite as preachy as it used to be, too, which helps.
Arrow, I can't say they're breaking a lot of new ground, but the shows are still reasonably tight. And even as I said, I don't mean to say this overly, but the Legends have improved a bit. So all the shows are up and coming on strong ratings like that. I'm hoping to see all renewals for next year.
Oh, I have a few doubts. Well, I shouldn't say that. The only show that I think is really in any type of danger of that might be Legends, but I feel like maybe this will get them back on track. So that being said, any last thoughts, Gary, on this crossover?
I hope this becomes a yearly thing. This is year two, so I'm hoping for year three, and I'm hoping they can do even better. But you know, this exceeded my expectations for the crossover in so many different ways, including my screaming hooray at the end. So we'll have to wait and see. But I have high hopes, and I hope we can be reviewing another miniseries again next year.
That would be awesome, especially if it can meet the bar that this has set. All right, we're going to go ahead then and wrap this episode and week up. And as we noted earlier on this week, a couple episodes ago, we will be back in a couple weeks. Shortly after the premiere of The Last Jedi. I know at least one of us will be seeing it on opening night. Gary, any plans yet?
Yes. I'm just confirming who's coming with me, but yes.
Yeah, there may be a little bit of last-minute shuffling on our end, too, but we do have tickets for Thursday night. So I think I can promise that when we do record that weekend, we will be talking about The Last Jedi. And, of course, all the shows that are hitting their mid-season finales here in December. Oh, and there are a couple shows that are coming back. Just for those who want to whet their appetites a little bit, we have the return of Vikings and the return of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I can't wait.
I know. All right, that's it for this episode. We'll be back in a few. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, watch, read, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.